This is an interview with Governor Vic Atieh at his office at Atieh International in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is June 28, 1993, and this is tape 41, side 1. Well, the next thing I wanted to talk about here was the flap over the Bohemian Grove incident.
Bohemian Grove?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an according to the paper, an all-exclusive male retreat where powerful men attend secretive Masonic-like rites, doff their clothes, and relieve themselves on trees, and perform off-color skits, where the men perform both male and female roles. Is that an adequate way to describe? No,
that's a perception. well, first of all, it is true that females were not allowed there. That's true. And were there important people there? Yes, that's true. I'll start at the end and then back up.
Okay.
When I returned, of course, this is some note that the governor had gone to the point of the Grove. So the media wanted to know my impressions. And I really took him by surprise. I didn't do it deliberately. I was telling them the honest truth. And I said to them, you know, the thing that impressed me the most was that there's music everywhere. Hmm. And there was. They have, the setup is, they have this Bohemian Grove. They have two areas in which they have a performance. One is totally musical. That is just music, not singing, not acting. And then each year they write a play, brand new play. Mm. And that's performed in another area. And it's a kind of a musical play. Mm. And yeah, sure, they don't have any women there, so obviously in the play there are men dressed like women to be part of the play. But then they have these camps. They're all over the place. And the man that invited me was from Medford, and he belonged to, I've forgotten the name of the camp. And there's places you can sleep, the small houses, and, you know, back up in the woods. And although this one, where I stayed, wasn't that way, some of the other camps, they had pianos there. We went to hear a pianist in somebody's camp one morning. At night, I could remember going to bed, you could hear guitar playing and music. So when I said my reaction was, it really was a lot of music, a lot of music. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a lot of drinking going on, usually in the evening after whatever performance. They also had a notable speaker. I'm trying to recall who it was. That was part of their program. There's a kind of a lake there, and you just kind of sit around, and they had speakers so you could hear the speaker. But there's all this wild imagination. If you don't know what it is and women can't go, it's true. There's some guys would water the trunk of a tree. But I didn't see a whole lot of people doing it, but some did it. It's sort of I did that. They had this large area where you'd go have your meals out in the open, and they just had benches and tables, buffet style every time. But you know, it's funny. Ford was there while I was there. Kissinger was there while I was there. Saw them both and talked to them. But you know, I'm saying to myself, you know, these big shots are gathering together to figure out some way to screw the little people, they don't have to do that once a year. You know, when I got to the airport, there's corporate jets all over the place. They could get on the telephone, or they could fly anywhere, and they can screw the little people every day of the week. They don't have to wait for Bohemian Grove to do it. So, I mean, that perception that they're getting together to connive against the little people is crazy. That's not what they're there for, and so it's a misconception.
people have talked about it.
I went once. It isn't something that I would yearn to go again or join. You have to join and pay money to join. You know, it's not that kind of a thing. I'm glad I went. I found it interesting. It's not as evil as it's perceived to be. Maybe some people don't like it because there aren't women there, but you know, they've got their own reasons for maybe disliking it. But it really isn't as evil as they portray it to be.
And it only happens once a year?
Once a year.
I vaguely remember reading in the article about that, about how the lot of news people will be just outside the gate waiting for people to be coming and going, and that eventually they got did they get into flying them in and out with helicopters because of some kind of protest? Or?
Well, there was going to be a protest when I was there. Mm-hmm. We'd heard about it. So I actually left early because I had to get back. And I had several hours once I got into, I'm trying to remember the town. But once I got to where the airport is, I quite a bit of time.
It was in Northern California, wasn't it?
It's in Northern California.
Santa Rosa.
Roughly the wine country up in there.
Yeah.
Okay. So I left. So if they were going to barricade it or, you know, demonstrate, that would have, I couldn't have gotten out to go get my airplane. Incidentally, I was flying commercial, not one of these jets. And so I left early, deliberately left early, just so I wouldn't get involved with any of that demonstration. If it happened, I wasn't there and didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. People refer to it as perils of the old boy network.
Well, yeah, the old boy network is, of course, that's a good term. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, when I think now of Governor Roberts, she's got the old girls network. I use that word, but I don't use it offensively. What she really is demonstrating is that you go to people that you know. That's how it happens. And she's going to people that she knows and has confidence in. And they happen to be women. And so oftentimes men will go to men because they're friends and they know them. Mm-hmm. So it isn't by a design, it's just, I suppose, by the nature of us as humans. So the old boy network is not something that's designed as exclusion. Mm-hmm. It's just by just the natural way of things. And now I use what I call Governor Roberts, the old girl network, because you find a lot of women there, and I don't find that offensive. I'm just saying that just kind of proves that you go to people that you know and have confidence in. Mm-hmm. And in her case, it was women, and with men, it's men.
Well, this being still 1984, there obviously was a primary and a general election. Were you very much involved in the election efforts of 1984?
Not too much, as I recall.
Do you go, you know, as being an incumbent governor, do you go to people that are running in the for the legislature or for other offices, other Republicans, and help them? Or do you stay aloof from that?
No, I don't stay aloof. I don't insert myself. I don't have a program of working at it. When they're recruiting, sometimes I'll give them a call, whoever they're trying to recruit, to encourage them to run.
Were you encouraging anybody to run that?
I can't define it
for
you. I'm just giving you what I remember. Every once in a while, a candidate might ask if I'd come to a fundraiser or something like that, and if it's convenient, I would go. But I wasn't deeply involved or deeply enmeshed. Obviously, I wanted to see Republicans take control if I could, but I wasn't the point person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. One thing that was mentioned was your support of Senator Hatfield during the Sakos affair, where he was accused of being involved in, I believe, some real estate deals that his wife, Antoinette, had gotten involved with in her real estate business. Is there anything you could say about that?
No. You know, there was a, bringing me more up to date, he got involved in the University of
North Carolina,
and
pardon me.
I would say to you that my confidence in Mark Hatfield has been strong and unshaken. Mm-hmm. Mark Hatfield may have used some misjudgment. Even Mark Hatfield might have been even naive at some instances. But I would never believe for a minute he would deliberately do anything that is not legal or correct. And if I were to weigh whatever they accused him of, mm-hmm. you spoke of one instance, I spoke of North Carolina. If I put that on a scale and measure that as for what he's done for Oregon and for the nation, that wouldn't even move the scale. The weight of what he's done for this country of ours and the state of Oregon is so much heavier than anything anyone might try to tarnish Mark Hatfield with.
What do you consider his main accomplishments to be?
Well, I'm going to be more amorphous to start with. First of all, I'm going to use the word integrity in spite of what you talk about scandals. He is a really upright and honest individual. Tried to designate. He nurtured through of recent events. He was a pivotal on the timber relief. He was there on the wilderness area. There's obviously the Health Science Center with all the things that are going on there. Mark Hatfield been intimately involved with, all of which is good for mankind, but also good for Oregon. I'm trying to remember his record. He's got a great record. he's highly regarded by his colleagues, which is a good measuring stick. He's been a legislator, Secretary of State, Governor, U.S. Senator. I don't know of anyone that's given that much to public service in the history of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. During the election, the papers also mentioned a rapprochement you had with the FL-CIO and Irv Fleischer. How did that come about?
I mean, am I getting angry with it?
No. That you actually had a recovery from those incidents. That there was a bettering of your relationship with the FL-CIO.
Well, I can't answer that question by memory. That is, I never really felt angry. I was frustrated. Remember, we talked about that
That's
earlier.
Right.
And I said, I don't have to talk to her. I think it was more media and Irv Fleischer than it was anything that I ever felt that strongly about.
Mm-hmm. You also fought against the 1.5% property tax limit
right.
that was going on at the time. But you had supported that in 1978.
I had said that I was going to vote for it.
Measure 6.
I said there were some problems with it, mm-hmm. and that if it passed and I was elected, I would work to make the changes to correct it. It failed in 78, mm-hmm. but you recall when we talked about it, I came back with what I thought were corrective measures that would relate to it. That never succeeded either, but I kept that part of my promise. And that time it was really a big campaign. I was one of the points on that one, and it did fail. But by a very, very small margin. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my speech in 1985 said, it's to the credit of Oregonians that this thing failed. But legislators, this is your last chance. Mm-hmm. That's in my 85 address to the legislature.
Well, prophetic.
Yeah, there you are.
Looking back on it. how did you view the election results then when they finally came in 1984?
Well, like all of them, I've never been 100% happy, but I'll never be 100% happy. Wouldn't that be wonderful someday that everything that you wanted to happen during the course of an election came out exactly the way you wanted it to come out? It just doesn't happen that way.
Well, just about that same time, there was a report that came out from the City Club of Portland. It said Governor Vicatia, quote, should be more visibly involved in boosting economic development in Oregon, according to a City Club of Portland report, and that there was a lack of a new public consensus for economic growth to replace the consensus for environmental protection in the early 1979 period is the single most important deterrent to coordinated action in economic development, the report emphasized. A desirable first step, for example, would be for ATIA to assume chairmanship of the Economic Development Commission, the committee urged. And apparently you were puzzled and bothered by this report. I bet they regret ever, you know, looking in retrospect, I bet they regret ever having criticized you on that area. Things certainly changed.
Well,
after
I'm
that.
Angry because you'd think it's, first of all, these are supposed to be bright people.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be aware people, number one. Number two, they never interviewed me in terms of coming to conclusions on this. And as I had told you earlier, there was a lot of things that this was one of my personal commitments, and we had already done a lot of things. And one, for example, they say that I should take over chairmanship. All of that's cosmetic stuff, and I wasn't interested in cosmetics. So we were working actually much harder, and I said, and maybe when it all washes down, and historians write about Vicatia, there'll be a lot of things that they won't write about. And if I were purely political, or I'm thinking about being one of the great governors of all time, I didn't go about it the right way. And we're back to what's leadership and all the rest of that. Mm-hmm. I knew what had to be done, and I went ahead and did it. To just take over a thing like economic development, that's cosmetics, that doesn't get you anywhere. I was already the leader of economic development among those that were that needed to be knowledgeable about it. By that I mean my prospects, mm-hmm. going to Japan, talking to people, visiting delegations, talking to the teams, people that came in from Japan to see if they wanted to make an investment. I was there. I was there every time, every single time, without fail. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Bob, we'll get into the trips and things like that.
Right.
The organization of the Economic Development Department, land use planning, on and on we go, unitary tax. All of it was designed really to move us forward. And I would say to you, yes, you're right, if they would have hindsight that one, it would have been entirely different. Because when I left office, that was one thing I really accomplished, and that was diversifying the economy of the state of Oregon. That happened. And it was proven. By the recession that we went through where everybody was hurt and Oregon did very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first events that you did participate in was attending the reception with the Chinese Premier Zhao Ziyang.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, January 1984. What kinds of invitations did you get as governor that you might have turned down? Especially, I'm thinking of humorous ridiculous events.
A humor thing was Zhao Zhang. Governor Duke Majin invited me to come down. They had, I forgot what it was, a business group anyway of California and the San Francisco area. They were their host of the premier. And they had an afternoon session on business, and the premier was there, which I went to. And then that evening, it was a banquet, big banquet. But the humorous part was, I don't know if I covered that with you. Well, I'll repeat it if I did. I was sitting next to the premier. Sitting slightly back of us and between us was the interpreter. So we had conversation during the course of the banquet. And then I'm thinking about Ruby Lewis. And Ruby, I was to collect autographs for Ruby, one of the things that I was doing over my tenure as governor. And I got her some good ones. And all of a sudden I say to myself, you know, it would be kind of fascinating if I get Zhao Zhang's autograph. So I asked the interpreter, does he give autographs? And so she made the interpretation. Yeah, he would do that. So Ruby Lewis has probably the only autograph of former Premier Zhao Zhang and who knows where. And I got that for Ruby. I felt real proud about that.
How did you come to be collecting autographs for somebody else?
Well, Ruby, she's a great person. She worked in my office. I had a great deal of, with all the people that I worked with, affection. This was something of interest to her. And I'm exposed to Rich Little, which I got an autograph. Henry Kissinger, I got an autograph. Carol Channing, I got an autograph. Well, I don't know. I got a lot of, I can't remember. Notable athletes, and you know, if governors get a chance to meet people like that. And so I'd say, I don't think I did this with Zhao Zhang, but I'd say, would you put to Ruby? That was Ruby Lewis. To Ruby, then autograph. So that's what I do. With, you know, in terms of autographs for me, people would come and say, do you mind if I get your autograph? My answer was always the same. I'd mind if you didn't want it.
Well, you must, as governor, you must have gotten a lot of invitations to various kinds of events all over. What kinds of things did you go to? What kinds of things did you turn down?
There were some things, and I'm going to cover a field that's a little bit different, but the national governors would have two meetings a year. One would be in Washington, D.C., and one would be some other state around the nation. I only went to one of those. That is what I call a mid-year meeting. I didn't think a great deal of them. I did go. I didn't have a chance to talk to my colleagues, but we had Western governors and we had Republican governors. All of those I went to. But, you know, places that were going to take time and just to be social, I just didn't need it. I was busy and I didn't need it. So I wouldn't go to it. I just went to one. And that was, I actually wanted to go to two. I wanted to go to the one in Portland, Maine, because Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine. I wanted to go to that one. But I've forgotten what interceded. It may have been the Bhagwan or a Japanese delegation. I don't recall. But anyway, I didn't go. So I went to one in, I think it was South Carolina. It was 1986. There were people asking me questions like, what do you like about your job? And what do you dislike about your job? And the reason I bring it up this way, my answer to dislike was always the same. I dislike making decisions on my schedule. I'd get about, 130 requests a month to do something in Oregon. And obviously I can't do 130. So I'm going to have to tell some people no. And I remember being on the other side of that, meaning I would invite a governor. And I can remember that my event was the most important event that was going on anywhere. And so I remember all of that. And so to decline was something, I just didn't like to do that. And the secretary would bring in this all these invitations, and then I'm supposed to sit there and say, well, I'll do this and I won't do that. And it was, I won't do that, that I disliked the most. Because again, as I say, I remember. And I can't define how I would make that decision. It never related to the size of a crowd. Some people would, some governors, some elected officials would relate it to how many people are going to be there. Mm-hmm. I never relate it that way. It may be proximity. Maybe I can do two or three in one. And one weekend, or you know, that kind of thing. If I go one place, I can't go diagonally across the state to another one. That sort of thing. That's how those decisions would be made. I never believed the how many thing anyway. You know, they tell you we're going to have 400 people. Well, if you have maybe 75, that's pretty good. Okay. So I mean, the size didn't mean anything. Clearly, League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, that kind of thing I would attend. Oregon School Boards Association, those are things I would go to. Pedal and Roundup, that was always set aside. The Rose Festival, that was always set aside. those kinds of things we try to find out in advance, so we put them on the schedule.
Any bizarre or unusual invitations?
Oh, I'm sure there must have been. Now you're really trying to jog my memory. There have been some things I have gone to that I was telling somebody, maybe the first time I ran for office at Independence, they'd have a celebration around the 4th of July. And they had this this contest with elected officials, mm-hmm. organic frisbees. Now, what organic frisbees are dried cow piles. And I'd say, if you guys really want to know if I'm serious about running for office, I'm out there tossing these cow pies around, organic frisbees. They have they get the politicians involved. I was involved in turkey race, I think it was, in Klamath Falls. Again, this got the politicians out there doing that. I remember, but it was kind of a wild thing, and that. I recalled out in Albany, they had a celebrity animal show where you show animals. And I'd gone to 4-H and Future Farmers. I watched them show cattle, and I watched them show sheep and pigs. Well, they had a sheep, and I watched the kids. I could see how they were handling them to kind of control it. The cow stepped on my foot. God, but the pig is the hardest thing in the world to deal with. And if you ever watched them, they have these wooden canes. I really felt like I was going to whap that pig, but I thought, no, that wouldn't be very good for a politician to whap that pig. I've been to Destruction Derby. Anyway, the winner. I got on the back end of their car. They drove around as a victory thing, and I'm hanging. I can remember Lon. He was shaking his head. This governor's crazy. He's just crazy. But it was kind of fun. You're getting involved with what the people are involved with, you know. And the things you do. I don't think I wanted to do the turkey thing again. I wouldn't want to do the show thing again. It's still good. People like these things. Maybe I never had that real sense of it being embarrassed. You know, oh, if I do that, I'm going to be embarrassed. I just kind of plunge in, and if I'm not good at it, how they expect a governor to be good at it, you know?
Right.
They have fun, and I really wasn't embarrassed. Just kind of get worked up into it, mm-hmm. and enjoy it, mm-hmm. have a good time at it.
When you went down to see the Chinese premier, was there a purpose behind that trip other than just participating?
No, in that particular one, no. It turned out that later on, when I did visit China, and I again met with him, and we at least had that connection, but I didn't have that particularly in mind. Here was a dignitary, Duke Major was a good friend of mine, and San Francisco was close, you know, all of those things. Mm-hmm. So I went down there for that.
There were a lot of protesters at that event over situations in Taiwan and Tibet. Did you see any of that?
No.
And then shortly after that, you made an announcement about a trip to September to the Far East, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Was that connected at all, and you're going down to San Francisco?
No. Mm-hmm. All of these things we're thinking about, we're working on, mm-hmm. beginning to prepare for. In 1984, we're still going? 1984, we'd been working with Fujitsu. We're calling some of the people that we hope are prospects. We thought we had a chance for an announcement by Fujitsu. We'll get into that when we get to the trip. No, the trip to San Francisco was not really connected. We've been doing a lot of work ahead of that.